Good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. It's 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 20th of September. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Kusu Chuang this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, guys. You can get in touch with us all the way till 10 o'clock today. We'll be here keeping you company and catching you up with everything you need to know today. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Again, of course, let's catch you up with what's happening. The biggest news, of course, has been yesterday. We heard that the former Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Najib Razak, was detained by MACC. And he had spent the night in lockup at the MACC headquarters. And he's expected to be taken to the Bukit Aman Police HQ today, where he is expected to be charged with, I believe it is, abuse of power.
Yeah, so some of the news portals are quoting sources saying that Dato' Sri Najib will be taken to Bukit Aman at, I think, first thing at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. today. And then he will, there's going to be a proceedings in the sessions court, and that's going to be charged at 3 p.m. today as well. So I think all eyes will definitely be on news. Keeping tabs on what's happening on the ground today with regards to this.
So we're going to be covering this at BFM, so you'll get the latest updates throughout the day. So as you mentioned, Joyce, so 8 a.m. we're going to be watching that, as well as all the way up to 3 o'clock. And should anything major happen, we will be ready to bring you the breaking news over the course of our programming.
Yeah, some say that he was detained at that particular hour, 4:13 in the afternoon.
A bit late, right? That
he could spend the night in the lockup. Also, his daughter tweeted, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think she posted that on her Instagram account. I think both his children had put out on social media that they were worried for their father, as well as, you know, asking for prayers and well wishes.
Mm. Yeah, I remember looking at Instagram. I think his son posted up a photo of Dato' Sri Najib eating his favorite Yong Tau Fu or something, saying hoping that when you get out from the lockup, we'll take daddy to eat your favorite Yong Tau Fu.
Okay. All right, well, moving on to North Korea. Also yesterday, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has agreed to shut down one of the country's main missile testing and launch sites. Now, he signed a pledge to permanently close this nuclear facility. This was after talks in Pyongyang with his South Korean counterpart Moon Jae-in.
Both leaders have agreed on a joint path to achieve denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, according to both leaders. That's interesting because not only is nuclear power a source of clean energy in a way, if they don't leak, of course, but it's also a source of weapons, massive weapons.
I think what's coming up from this as well is that the North Korean leader, Mr. Kim, said that he hoped to visit Seoul in the near future. And, you know, if he does that, he will be the first North Korean leader to do so. That would be quite interesting.
I tell you, so are you guys encouraged by what's coming out of the inter-Korean diplomatic talks? It seems that we've made quite a lot of headway this year, particularly in terms of diplomatic outcomes. So analysts were saying that the world was surprised by the outcomes from this summit because it was a lot more concrete than they had been expecting.
Yeah, and you didn't expect the younger Kim to have done so after, you know, the number of years that his father stood firm in terms of his stance towards their southern neighbours. But you're right. I don't know what's prompted it, but it's basically made us a lot less concerned about military, you know, attacks. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they were firing missiles, right, into the ocean.
We can see that they've announced plans to link up their railways. They've allowed more reunions for families separated by the war, cooperate on healthcare. I think they're also they've said that they're going to seek to co-host the 2032 Summer Olympics.
To co-host.
That's interesting.
Definitely working on that relationship there.
All right, okay, so it's coming up to five minutes past 6 o'clock, and after this, we'll take a look at Sweden. They're pulling the plug on their popular citizen-run Twitter experiment. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Hello and good morning. If you've just joined us, this is The Morning Run. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Joyce Goh. That was Parliament with Flashlight. Now, we have news that Sweden's official Twitter project called Curators of Sweden will be coming to an end this month. This is after almost 7 years of grabbing headlines. So what Curators of Sweden actually is, it's grabbed international attention in 2011 when Sweden became the first country to put its own official Twitter account into the hands of ordinary citizens. So a different curator would take charge of this Twitter account every week. And it was a radical experiment in free speech, even for a country like Sweden. But now they're calling it quits.
What a fantastic idea. Sorry, I checked from the story. They've only got 146,000 followers. Right, I think Uma Pagan's got more than that. only 356.
Really? No, so not a lot. Apparently, from the story,
only 356 people have tweeted, and only 200,000 tweets. I would have imagined there were a lot more followers than that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also because anybody can post. I think you get chosen to post to tweet out from that account, and tweets are only deleted if they violate the Swedish law, promoted a commercial brand, or presented a security threat. So those are if you tweet things according to these things, then yeah, they'll be deleted.
Okay, so I think I have an idea as to why they didn't have so many followers, Chung. It's essentially launched by the Swedish Institute and Visit Sweden. So perhaps it was that. It was aimed at presenting Sweden through the eyes of its citizens. So, you know, when you sometimes look at like an official Twitter account, especially one that promotes tourism, you're not sure whether this is something you may want to follow or if it's of interest. So perhaps that could be an angle, but it was also touted to be the most democratic Twitter account because, you know, it was rotated, so no one had complete control over it. Stephen Colbert as well, the talk show host, had said that he wanted Sweden to let him take over the account for a little bit. I'm not sure whether he did, though.
Yeah, look, I mean, it could even have been a private site, right, where you asked to follow and you can either be told you can or cannot follow. And you're right. I mean, if it's official sources, then typically official sources.
Do you think it could happen here in Malaysia? I mean, would we want a Curators of Malaysia project?
Never in a million years.
Why not?
Actually, we have something
philosophically
similar.
Yes, it would be a good idea, but it never happened officially, right?
We have something similar. I think under the handle TWT_Malaysia, and it's not an experiment by
Twitter
the government
Malaysia?
Or any institute by that matter. So I think it changes users every week as well. And basically, at the same time, I think one of the rules for the admin is to avoid sensitive racial religious issues.
Okay, that limits the things you can actually say on Twitter.
The real honesty, the real Malaysia, right?
No, but think about it, right? So if this Twitter project was made or was set out to, I guess, show Sweden through the eyes of its ordinary citizens, if we had a Malaysian official Twitter account like this, who do you think would be best? I mean, who would represent Malaysia best? Who would you give this Twitter admin to? You know, in a rotating basis, yes, but who would best represent this? And I'm trying to think of like who I want to be in charge of this Twitter account.
Yeah, so your predilections and choices and mine will all be very different. And I think the difference between us and Sweden is that we're not a homogenous society in the sense that we're not all, you know, tall, blonde, blue-eyed, and we all ski down slopes.
That's
right?
Not generalizing at all.
You know, and that's the problem. There is no Malaysian, right?
But that's why it's wonderful.
But that's great. Yeah. So we could it's rotated. So I think it'd be great if we can do from young all the way till old Malaysians, you know, every week just rotate. And but I don't know how we're going to do that. And also different states and all that, you know, the works. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know how they do now those Insta stories about, you know, Instagram takeovers and Instagram life in a day. Is that right? Yeah. So, I mean, wouldn't that be great if someone was live tweeting about their day and it shows life in different states, life in different, you know, urban and rural areas. I think it's quite
fun. And also
fun.
Different occupations.
It'll be so sanitized.
Like
And, you know, the elements of social media, which is so interesting to a lot of people, is the salaciousness of it, right? The controversy, the salaciousness, the gossip. And you'll never get that. You know, the real Malaysia, which is the soft underbelly as we know it, right? It'll never come out.
Speaking about the real Malaysia, Tun M wants to see Malaysian products like nasi lemak, thosai and dim sum being marketed globally through a franchise system. But will this work? We're going to discuss after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Deepesh Mode there with Just Can't Get Enough. 6:21 right now on Thursday, the 21st, the 20th of September. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Kusu Chuang this morning. And let's talk some food, guys, before we get too hungry. I don't know if you've had breakfast, but I sure haven't. And I can hear my stomach growling. Mm-hmm. But Tun Dr. Mahathir has said that he wants to see Malaysia's nasi lemak, thosai and dim sum being marketed globally through a franchise system someday. So he's saying, well, there's a lot of food in Malaysia that can be marketed, you know, especially through a franchise system. So why not use that to grow globally, which he reckons has a lot of potential?
Well, in the first place, only nasi lemak is really Malaysian. Dim sum, there's an argument for it. Well, in fact, it is from Hong Kong, okay?
So in some places it's called yang cha.
Yeah, and thosai is not from Malaysia, it's from southern India. But be that as it may, if Malaysian.
Are you correcting the PM?
I am indeed. He only got three out of 1 out of 3, which is only 33%, which is a fail. Right. Sorry to them. But even if that were to happen, and there would be a huge market just from Malaysians, from the 1 million over that have left the country in recent years, fleeing the regime. And I mean, you've been abroad, right? You're always looking for Malaysian food.
Well, yeah.
Frozen roti canai.
The Melayu in me, I need to have rice. So yeah. If I can't find Malaysian, then I'll do the next best thing. But if you have Malaysian, so would you go and eat Malaysian if you were abroad? Or this is really more catered to you know, introducing or promoting Malaysian food to foreigners.
I think it's more promoting, yeah. Okay. I think for Malaysian tourists, I agree. I mean, I'm like Mel, I need to look for rice. But it doesn't have to be Malaysian. It can be rice or it can be dim sum. It can
be just so China,
you know, very Asian, Malaysian taste.
But I look for chili padi when I'm abroad. Actually.
Oh yeah, chili as well. Yeah. Yeah. But I must say that there is a, I mean, look at Papa Rich. They managed to franchise.
That's not Malaysian food. That's, I don't know what that is.
It's some Malaysian delights.
That's terrible, how they market Papa Rich.
But they're in Australia. They're in Melbourne, Sydney, Perth, Adelaide. You know,
so Adelaide.
Yes.
Yeah, so what was that?
So that's a franchise.
Where did that come from?
Adelaide.
Okay. All right. So we've yesterday Enterprise spoke about this on their show, and they got so much interaction on Twitter. So I'm just going to read out a few from Victor Lau, who says, "Don't forget the Baba Nyonya cuisine, because that's Malaysian and
that
has a huge potential to be marketed as well." And I'm also wondering whether, didn't we have, I think this was brought up by the Twitter handle, that's my full name, and she said, what happened to Satay Ria? Do you guys remember that? That
used to be a
franchise. Yeah, and I don't know what happened to that anymore.
Actually, in terms of being franchisable, Satay is amazing because it's quite portable. It's not that messy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite, you know what I mean? It's quite...
meat on a stick. It's easy to sell.
It's like a kebab, right?
Yeah, you just need to get the sauce right and the method.
It's much less messy than a kebab.
So I was thinking about how food spread around the world, right? So with Italian food, around the world, Chinese food's around the world. And the way food spreads is through its diaspora, isn't it? They go, they set up a community, they start cooking, they set up restaurants, and people learn the food. It becomes part of the culture of that place. So Malaysia and the Malaysian diaspora could leverage on that, right? Maybe set up a restaurant or invest in a Malaysian restaurant and help spread the Malaysian cuisine.
Oh, already do. I mean, I just guess from the sheer number of Malaysians, which is not a lot in the largest context, only about 31 million of us.
It feels a lot, the
it
brain
feels
drain.
A lot. Yeah, right? It does, right? It hurts.
Yeah, but also another type of food that we could consider as well to export is banana leaf rice. That's one, no?
Yeah.
Is that Malaysian?
But just not Malaysian, though. I mean, my favorite restaurant in Croydon had banana leaf. It was actually, they had a great Sunday buffet. But I can't say they were Malaysian.
Okay. So nasi lemak is...
Lemak, satay is amazing.
So, Burger Ramly.
The other thing is, that could work in a franchise system. I'm just curious to know how we can... Would you keep the authentic taste, or would you... You know, assimilate it to a more Western taste.
It's already happening, right?
I'm thinking
less
about
chili, less
nasi
hot,
lemak, to kind of Westernize it, make it not too
spicy,
you know, authentic. Yeah,
yeah, because the spicy level has to come down a bit.
You know, Singapore is great at doing this. They're great at marketing food and events and heritage, right? So
yeah, but their food themselves is not very good.
No, but it doesn't matter. But they can package it and market it well. And I think we
are you saying
that
Singapore is better at marketing and commercializing themselves than us?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
They're better at claiming that this is ours and they market it well. I mean, look at Crazy Rich Asians and how they marketed the hawker food
there.
That
didn't come from a Singaporean, though,
and
did it?
Satay.
Yeah, I mean, the first few minutes was like a visit Singapore ad, wasn't it? So maybe something Malaysia can learn from that. And I do think, you know, one of the biggest selling points we have is our food. So why not leverage that and package it up and tie it up with a nice red bow? All right, it's coming up to 6:26 and we've got the first news bulletin of the day coming up after Sugar Ray with Someday on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:40 on the clock. You're listening to The Morning Run, Evil Friends by Portugal the Man. You're not my evil friends. You're Joyce Go and Kusu Chong here with me. I'm Melissa Idris, and we're going to take you all the way till 10 o'clock today with all the latest news as well as analysis of that news, what it means to you. Thank you, everyone, for weighing in on our conversation a little bit earlier about which foods make the best franchise or can be franchised internationally. This coming from a request from the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir. We have Roland Tan saying he went to Papa Rich in Adelaide when he missed his curry. It was possible, but comforting. And I think that's all you want, right?
I love that. It is so true.
It is
absolutely right.
It's all that you want when you're looking for some home-cooked or home-style food.
When you're away from home, yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the talk of the town, guys, is really that billion-dollar whale book, right? It was the talk of the town over the weekend, and I think people are still talking about it. Now we have, I think over the weekend, we saw a PDF copy of the book, an e-book version, had been making its rounds on WhatsApp in Malaysia and Singapore, and it had been rapidly shared by users. So I believe the authors now have cautioned against forwarding the leaked copy. So if you have received an illegal galley copy of the Billion Dollar Whale, please tell the person to send it to you. That Hatchet, the publishing company, will take legal action against them because the copy has an embedded digital footprint.
Yeah, apparently that's what Tom Wright, one of the two authors, wrote in an email to the Star. I don't know why they wrote to the Star, but nonetheless, that was the message.
It's possibly the Star asked them.
That's right. Because there's a digital kind of like a footprint there. But look, I was a recipient of the said PDF. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, this is intellectual property infringement at the end of the day, right? And
right.
I'm gonna be on record as saying that I'm gonna be going out to buy the book. It's an amazing read, very much more readable than other write-ups of the same subject in recent times, and it's a great effort.
I think it's really ironic that people are reading the soft copy that's been pirated about people stealing money.
Yeah.
You know, it's
so
just,
what makes you more exactly. what makes you different from
different,
Jolo,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, and I hope they realize that the soft copy is actually not the exact. It's not the actual copy that went to print. Because if you were to compare the two, what they went to print is not what you see on soft copy. So it's not the actual story.
And
you have to
you
read
know?
The print. Because I received it too, I admit. But I pre-ordered 5 copies. And when I went to get, I mean, I read the hard copy. I gave out to friends as well and some family members. And it's different. So what people are reading on the soft
copy. Oh, cool.
I'm going
to read it all over again then.
It's the unproofed copy, right? So that must have not been the final version that went to the publisher.
And changes.
Yeah, so
does that make it more salacious?
No, it doesn't.
It's not the actual print, like newspaper, right?
But it's not, you know, it's not proofread or it's not perfect.
Oh, yeah, there were some errors in there.
So
yeah.
Why would you want to read? It's like watching a movie that hasn't been cut
or
you know, had the final edit, right?
It's not the actual thing in a way, yeah.
But what bugs me, Joyce, is that there have been reports that people who had pre-ordered the book in receiving the PDF had cancelled their orders. And that, for me, I think is some of the... That for me, is what is most troubling. I find that, you know, I mean... This is not just any book. It's a book that changed the course of our country. And the reporting of Tom Wright and Bradley Hope has, in a way, impacted all of us after May 9th as well. So in a small way, I don't think we should be stealing what is rightfully due to them.
Yeah, and it took so much time and effort. I mean, if you read the book, it's amazing how they got this story, how they wrote that, how they got the information. I think they took a sabbatical off work to work on the book.
Well, it's been 2015, right, when they started working on it. So this has been a long time coming. The hard work and sweat and blood and tears of journalists at the Journal.
Let's flip the coin here. I mean, I don't understand what you're saying. And it's the same reasons why people shouldn't buy pirated CDs and pirated movies on Bluetooth.
Do you think it's exactly the same, though?
It's similar, but it's not.
But
because
we don't have that same kind of investment.
There's an added dimension here, right? Yeah. But then let's flip it onto Tom and Bradley, right, and the publisher's Hachette. Why didn't they offer a much cheaper version of the electronic book? Because the book is $80, $79.90. Not everybody can afford that kind of like cost. And if you offered something which is, $19.90 or something, or $15.90 or $8.90 or $9.90, why not?
But that could be said about any book, right? So if you go to the bookstores now, that's what books are priced at.
Correct. But that's an omission on the part of the publishers and the writers, because if you don't offer an electronic version for something which is reasonably affordable, then people are just going to go for the free
version. That's not an excuse for piracy or stealing.
No, you're right. Exactly. You're right. Yeah. But these are free market forces.
But after all that work and after all the time and effort invested, I think they should price it competitively to they should
factor that in. I agree. I'm on the author side. I'm a writer myself. And, this is obviously wrong. But hey, these are people who have voted with their wallets, right? At the end of the day,
what do you think it is about this PDF copy? So I reviewed the book on Bookmark last night with Uma Pagan and Piki Pagan and Keith Kam of the News Desk, and we were discussing why we thought people wanted to download the PDF, read it, and disseminate it. And it was likely that there was this fear of missing out because everyone was talking about the book and the fact that the book had sold out in all bookstores, that you had the PDF copy and you didn't want to miss out, so you downloaded it illegally. And it was almost like, watching or getting those pirated movies or streaming those pirated movies because you wanted to be in the know what everyone's talking about. But it doesn't make it any less wrong, right?
No, of course. But it's the same reason why Barnes & Noble shut down. It's the same reason why bookstores all over America have shut down. Because
are you just talking about the format? Is it just the format?
It's the format.
Or the pricing?
It's the format and the pricing. They're both. They're wrapped up into one bunkos, right?
One bunkos. One nice franchise bunkos.
It's portable. You can keep it everywhere. You can have your entire book collection on your phone if you wanted to have it, right? But 300 books or 3,000 books of your collection is a massive space eater.
Well, for this book in particular, although it's sold out, many people have ordered it still. I think the bookstores have ordered reprints. Lit Bookstore is one of them who said that, they've run out, but they're ordering a second order as well for next month.
Can I just say, the other travesty that hasn't really gone below the radar with this issue is the fact that about the same time Bradley Hope and Tom Wright's book came out, there's also an equivalent copy on the same issue by P. Gunasinghiram, he of Malaysia Kini and Kini Biz, and also Malaysian, right? And also Claire Rucastle-Brown, who's also written on the issue, albeit a collection of her articles on the issue. We've got three books on the same issue. Why are Malaysians so bedazzled by the, in a way, foreign version or the American version, right?
I don't think it's because of the foreign version.
Why aren't we buying Gunnar's book, for example?
We are. I bought it. I think the Claire
Castle. Why isn't the buzz all about Gunnar's book?
It's also the quality of the journalism. This has been, the writing of Tom Wright. And I mean, no disrespect to Gunnar. In fact, we're going to have him on the show on Monday to talk about this book.
Yes.
But, the quality of the Billion Dollar Whale is, you can't deny it.
It's
a riveting read. You could not put it down.
It's like a movie script, basically.
It's exactly
right?
Like it's made for a screen. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not fiction. It's real.
It's real.
It happened to us. All right. It's 6:48 right now, and you can get in touch with us. Our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio, or you can tweet us. You can WhatsApp in at 018-789-8899. We'll be back with a look at how the voting age could be lowered from 21 to 18. After this, BFM 89.9.